We're looking at levy limits and the gap in revenues and spending in our state's communities. It's a conversation about local taxes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. By definition, levy limits provide the maximum amount a town or a village or a city, a county may implement as a property tax levy on parcels within their boundaries. But a town board may say, hey, let's adopt a resolution to exceed the levy limit. And according to the State Revenue Department, last year there were 14 local governments that gained voter approval to go above and beyond. So is your community struggling to cover basic services? Have you gone to voters in a referendum to raise levy limits? Or do you anticipate you'll need to? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Kurt Witinski is Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. That's an advocacy organization for Wisconsin cities and villages. Kurt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
So when we look at all of our state's communities, just a fraction have passed levy limit referendums since 2006. But on the whole, we did see some movement last year compared to previous years. What is driving that increase?
That's right, Kate. So levy limits have been in place since 2006. And in 2011, they were made even stricter than they were before. We used to be able to have inflationary growth, roughly 2%, 3%. And in 2011, they were ratcheted down so that a community could only increase their property tax levy from one year to the next by new growth that is occurring in their community, new construction. So if your community isn't experiencing growth, which a lot of communities in the central and northern part of our state are not, it's not like Dane County everywhere, your budget and your revenue coming in is basically frozen. And so over time, as communities aren't able to bring in additional revenue but their expenses go up, they come to a point where they have to make a decision. Do we stop providing certain services, or do we go to the voters and say, here's our situation, do you give us permission to exceed our levy limits and continue to provide the same level of services? And I think that's the point at which communities are reaching.
Let's look for a moment before and after the Great Recession, because it seems levy limits really had a mission and vision when there was this building boom prior to the Great Recession. What happened afterward?
Yeah, that's a good point. The state imposed levy limits right before the Great Recession. So there was this growth occurring, and it was fairly widespread. And after 2008, 2009, new construction, especially in housing, just ended. And it's coming back in many places, but not in great parts of Wisconsin at all.
So in smaller communities where the economy, it's going, but not going gangbusters, levy limits, it sounds like it really tamped down the ability for that community to continue to grow.
Yeah, or continue to provide the amenities that people want or the service level that people want. That's right.
We're talking about levy limits with Kurt Witinski. He is Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and he manages the league's lobbying program. You can join in at any point. What do you make of communities asking residents for permission to raise taxes? Is your community struggling to provide basic services? How do you want to see it address that? Is raising taxes the answer? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kurt, a number of communities in the state are hurting financially to dealing with emergencies like flooding. How has that affected villages and city budgets?
Right. When challenges like flooding and unanticipated expenses arise from some disaster that may have happened in your community, it's very difficult to deal with that. There are some exceptions built in the levy limit law that if a community does spend more than they anticipated because of a flood, for example, it is possible the following year to obtain a exception that allows them to raise more revenue than they to basically recover some of those costs from dealing with floods. So over the course of how long levy limits has been in place, the legislature has created some exceptions to deal with situations like that. The real problem with levy limits is that over time, just like your household expenses go up naturally, right, from rate of inflation, your utility costs, the costs of buying gas, or for us, obviously, employee costs, benefits. So we're not able to keep up with that because levy limits are so strict. If your net new construction number, which is just another way of saying how much new construction is occurring in your community.
How much growth is
occurring. Mm-hmm. Is below 1%, and it's consistently below 1%, but costs are 2.5%, 3%. There's no way you can keep up. And over time, you're looking at, well, how do we continue this police department at the level we have, or a fire department, or library hours, or you know whatever service your community is providing? That's the question that arises eventually.
The Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau found that shared revenue funding for counties and municipalities dropped 8.5% over the last decade, largely because of cuts that were made in 2010 and 2011. What happened then, and how has that made an impact?
So that was about when Governor Walker came into office, and in conjunction with Act 10, he made some significant cuts to balance the state's budget to various programs where the state sends money to local governments. One of those programs is shared revenue. And that, and you just said the number, there were significant cuts. So local governments, cities, villages, towns, and counties receive revenue to provide the services they provide in two main ways. One is property taxes. And one are through programs that the state, where the state sends money to local governments. Those programs that the state sends money to local governments have been either reduced, cut, total funding has been cut in the last decade, or it's just been maintained at the same level.
Flat.
Thank you. And so operating, so we can't really turn to property taxes to increase property taxes, and it's not like every local official wants to increase property taxes. They know it's hard on citizens, and it's basically the last resort they would turn to as well. Right. Mm-hmm. But we're just caught in this bind. Local governments are caught in a bind where there's a reduction in state revenue that's going to local governments, and there's an inability to raise revenue locally because property tax is really the only option we have. Other than, as you saw in Madison recently, there are these small steps a community could take. The wheel tax would be one of them, and you use that for transportation purposes.
How often do you see communities stuck in this limbo situation that you describe, where you're not seeing construction booming or even really doing much construction since the Great Recession? And what I'm asking really is, you know, are there communities around Wisconsin that haven't recovered in the past decade?
Definitely, yes. So there are 600 cities and villages in Wisconsin, which I'm most familiar with. There's 1,200 towns. I'm not as familiar with them. So there was a study by the Wisconsin Policy Forum in, I'd say, a year ago, and they looked at this issue. And there are hundreds of communities that have not experienced new construction since 2008, and or minimal new construction, below 1% that entire time. So out of the 600, at least a third and probably more of our communities are basically frozen. Their levies have been frozen.
We're talking about state government levy limits that put a cap on the increase in local property taxes from one year to the next. Kurt Witinski is our guide. He's Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Do you work for a local government? How does the state's current policy around levy limits affect the services you provide? Do you want to see state lawmakers lifting restrictions around tax levies, or do they serve a very solid purpose? Join in 800-642-1234 with your questions and thoughts. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this in a moment with Kurt Witinski right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about levy limits here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For the past 13 years, Wisconsin has imposed levy limits on municipalities to essentially slow the growth of local property taxes. A 2011 law change linked the allowable levy increase exclusively to increases in property values due to new construction that we've been talking about. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum looked at this and concluded in a report last year that levy limits indeed slowed growth of property taxes during a period of economic expansion, but they made it harder for slow-growing communities to break out of that pattern. So is your community struggling to provide services? How do you want to see it address it? Is raising taxes the answer? We're at 800-642-1234, and Kurt Witinski is Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and he stays with us. Kurt, as you advise local communities around the state when they say, you know what, we have to go to voters on this, we need to exceed our levy limits, what do you advise these communities? How do they talk to their constituents?
That's a good question. So case law, court decisions over the years have said that local jurisdictions like a city cannot advocate for a referendum question. They can educate their voters. And so there's a fine line between, hey, we're just providing the information that you need to be, to make an informed decision on whether to increase the levy or not. And various communities have done that in different ways. Just internally, they've put together charts or information showing voters, here's what we can do if the levy's increased. Here's what will happen if we stay at status quo. Some communities, South Milwaukee's an example, about 2 years ago, they hired a communications firm to help them do that, to accomplish that. And they were very concerned about public safety issues and the response time of their fire department and police department if they weren't able to bring in more property tax revenue. And so they explained that to the voters, and their referendum passed by overwhelming, I think it was 70% approval. Not every community's done it that way, hired a communications firm to help them and kind of guide the process. It's interesting because school districts are totally more familiar with this process and have a culture of and a history of going to and a practice of going to the voters, and it fairly frequently. So every election cycle you see a lot statewide school districts going to the voters. That culture has not existed in other local governments like cities, villages, towns, and counties. So that's also part of the reason why you haven't seen a lot of referendums that cities present to voters. But I think that's changing. And we saw that in 2018, the fall election there, where 14 mm-hmm. communities passed a referendum.
What are some services at risk in communities at risk of going away?
It's always going to be different. Different communities will emphasize different reasons why they want to go to a referendum. In some places, in a lot of places, it's transportation, maintaining the roads, plowing the roads, the cost of maintaining our streets and bike paths and everything else. Others emphasize public safety. Others, it might be, library, transit. So it really depends on what the community what issues are facing the community and what the priorities are.
And it sounds like, though, if a community makes a strong enough case for why this money is needed, it sounds like voters are responding to that. They get that.
It does. And in 2018, it did.
Okay.
One thing that's interesting is that we do not know. I don't know. I think the data is out there, but we do not know how many communities since 2006 have gone to a referendum and been unsuccessful. We've actually asked, we've submitted this as a nice project for some students at UW-Madison, and they might take that up, hopefully. But the data's out there. You'd have to go to the Wisconsin Elections Commission or something, because they keep track of every referendum question that's been asked in around the state, and we just haven't got into that yet.
We're talking with Kurt Witinski. He is Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. We're looking at levy limits and what communities around the state do about, when they want to exceed them. Is your community struggling to provide services? How do you want to see it address it? Did your community already raise taxes? Did you see the rationale behind it? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kurt, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce released a report this week showing that local government groups spent more than $5 million to lobby state government many times for policies to raise taxes. The league does lobby on behalf of its members. Is this the best way to spend taxpayer dollars?
Well, that let me present my answer like this. Every state agency, I'm sure the general public doesn't know this, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation, has a legislative liaison where that agency is explaining to legislators what the agency does and what the implications would be for changing in policy at the state level for that agency. I view our role, counties association, our association, which is cities and villages, towns, in the same capacity. We are around to explain to legislators, here are the ramifications of the decision you're about to make. Take this into account, and we inform legislators about that. We advocate for maintaining local control. That is that local elected policymakers be able to make decisions that affect their communities. And we advocate for the ability to raise sufficient revenue to provide the services that people want. We've been doing that since 1898. Our association was created in 1898 by 16 white guys with beards. We have a picture of them. And they were all mayors of central Wisconsin. And the document that they prepared to create themselves, the first thing they said is, we need people in Madison advocating for local government. So that's been a role and a function that's been a tradition of local governments. It's very difficult for an individual, let's say you're on the village board of Black Earth or Mazomani, and you're working all day and then you go to the village board meeting and there's no way you have time to observe and keep track of what's going on in the state capital that might affect city or village government. So very wisely, these communities came together and said, you know what, we're going to share our resources and hire some people that just monitor what's going on in the state capital on behalf of communities. And that's what we do.
Well, let's take a call now. John is joining us from Appleton. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning. And thanks for everybody and what they do. So here's the question. Do you know of any municipalities that have consciously raised their levy limits to fund green energy or alternative energy harvesting or development, say solar panels, wind turbines, or even enhanced building conservation savings within cities or towns in Wisconsin?
Yeah, John talking about green investments there.
Though these are all amenities or enhancement of local services that some communities would love to do, but because revenue's tight, they're not able to. Most communities are focused on providing the basic services that everyone wants and needs, right? Police, fire, library, parks and recreation, sewer and water. I have not personally seen a community decide to go to a referendum to exceed levy limits for these specific purposes, but these are examples of amenities I think that some communities think would be very valuable and might want to do. But I haven't seen a community go to the voters on these issues precisely.
John, is this something you would like Appleton to explore?
Yes, ma'am. And we have a new mayor being elected next year, and I'm consciously looking for someone who's embracing the Paris Accord and climate change concerns and conditions. So absolutely.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call. And certainly it looks like priorities, you set priorities and figure out, you know, what's on top and then what comes next.
Right. And I would just respond to that cities across the nation and cities in Wisconsin have been leaders on climate change and talking about the need to, I mean, some communities have emphasized the need to participate and comply with the Paris Accord since we haven't seen as much action state and federal level.
So looking into your crystal ball, could we see more communities turning to voters to exceed state levy limits?
I think that, yeah, that's what I would predict based on what happened in 2018. And there hasn't been any reduction in easing of levy limits. We go to legislature and ask for that every session. So I'm thinking, and there will be.
And
more.
What does the legislature say? Like, oh, hey, you again? I mean, like, what is that? What is
they say, hi, Kurt. No, the answer is no. The legislature, the current majority, which has been in place since 2011, their philosophical perspective is, hey, you have an outlet, local governments. If you want to increase property taxes beyond what we're limiting it to, you have to go to the voters. And not many of you have done that, and that's all true. But I think we will see more and more communities make that choice.
Kurt, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kate. Thank you.
Kurt Witinski is Deputy Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and he manages the league's lobbying program. Coming up, you've aligned to Representative John Nygren on a package of bills to tackle our state's opioid epidemic. Have you or a loved one been affected by opioid addiction? What services saved them? We're at 800-642-1234. We'll look at the bills right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A programming note here, the House Judiciary Committee will continue considering two articles of impeachment against President Trump this morning. You can hear live coverage. It starts at 8 o'clock. That's live coverage of the House Judiciary Committee session starting this morning at 8 on WPR and online at WPR.org. Right now, we're talking about bipartisan legislation to address the opioid addiction crisis here in Wisconsin. When Representative John Nygren was elected in 2006, he didn't imagine that opioid use disorder would be a policy focus for him. But then his town, Marinette, was called Heroin Town by some news outlets, and the crisis hit home for him. It devastated his home. And for the past 5 years, he's been working on dozens of bills to improve treatment systems. The package is called the Hope Agenda. How do you want to see state and local agencies responding to the opioid crisis? Have you seen positive effects from the Hope Agenda? We're at 800-642-1234. Republican Representative John Nygren's District 89 covers Marinette, Oconto, and Suamico in the northeast part of the state. He co-chairs the Joint Finance Committee. Representative Nygren, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
You've been working on this legislation. It's been a journey for over 5 years. How have you seen public sentiment, public opinion change in that time?
Well, I definitely think one of the best aspects of the conversation that we've had for 5 years is that more people are aware. More people are aware of addiction. The stigma, while still significant, public perception of what an addict is and how they become addicted is still problematic, but I think it's a better understanding than it was just 5 years ago. So I think that's the most positive thing. There's never been any silver bullet to address this issue. We've tried to make changes as a state, but just to get folks talking and understanding that, you know, the addiction that struck my family can strike theirs just as easily.
When did you start realizing that drug abuse was a really big crisis that our state needed to act on, that the legislature needed to act on?
Well, I mean, the story of my daughter, Cassie, who's struggled since she was basically a junior in high school, and that would have been 2006, is something I don't know that we've talked about. But initially, we kept it private. But when I decided... Because your family struggles are typically that they're private and it's an issue that you deal with amongst your family. But when I decided to get involved was when my hometown, a place I still call home, was identified as a heroin town. As you know, it was. You were reading obituaries of young people on almost a weekly basis, or sometimes twice a week. So it was a. You know, as a elected official, as a citizen legislator that represents that area, I had to act because it was one of the most pressing, if not the most pressing issues of my community at the time and still is.
May I ask, does Cassie know about the Hope Agenda and about these bills?
She does, initially, and this is one of those things that, and be careful what you ask for, I guess. She actually, I met her, and she was in a female correctional facility down in southeast Wisconsin, and I met her, and she actually asked me to do something. She said, you know, there were a lot of young people like her that she was serving time with that had similar stories, good families, good backgrounds that shouldn't be where they are. So she asked me, and I guess I was still a little hesitant because I wanted her to focus on her. She's a very caring young woman, but you know. So I think her heart was in the right place. But now, 5 years later, I don't think she regrets it. But it has made the struggle for her, I think, even more difficult because she has become kind of the face, in sometimes in positive way and sometimes in a negative way of the struggles and the failures of people that are dealing with addiction.
Earlier this month, you introduced 7 new bills as part of this agenda. How do you see this legislation acting in conjunction with what we already have, policy we already have in Wisconsin?
Well, these are, I guess, more like a continuation, or I guess I've been just saying they really are filling the gaps of the things that we've done to this point. I do think we've made some significant progress. I think we've done some good things. Treatment is more available, but it always needs to be. There always needs to be more. We've addressed policies that have created barriers for people to get into treatment. We've addressed our correction system on a very minimal basis, but the steps we've taken have been positive. These bills actually either continue what we've already done. There's a couple that continue programs that had been originally designed to sunset, like the prescription drug monitoring program requirement that doctors utilize the system to make sure that you as a patient, they have a clear understanding of what your prescribing history is, that we will extend that for another 5 years. The 911 Good Samaritan law that provides limited immunity for somebody that is aiding somebody in an overdose, that we will continue because we're simply not done. We've seen progress. Overdose deaths are down. Prescribing is down. But I want to make sure that this is a long-term, sustainable changes to our state. And, these bills fill that gap. You know, issues such as recovery housing, issues such as employment are very vital to long-term recovery for somebody that's struggling with addiction.
What do you see as the biggest barriers to treatment right now here in Wisconsin?
Well, we don't have enough providers. That's the biggest issue. And Wisconsin's not different than any other state. We have a shortage of addictionologists. We have a shortage of DA counselors. We have not enough people. It's a consistent story you hear in a lot of different ways, whether it be manufacturing, whether it be other parts of our workforce. We just don't have enough of those. So trying to find ways, using telemedicine, trying to find ways to make sure that there is a larger network of available treatment for the people who need it.
We're talking about the opioid crisis with Representative John Nygren. You can join in. Have you struggled to find support or the right resource to overcome addiction? Do you think more resources are needed to be readily available in Wisconsin for people struggling with substance abuse? Was there a flaw in the system that made becoming sober more difficult for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Michael now, joining us from Janesville this morning. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've been in the recovery community I've been clean for over 4 years, and I was addicted to opiates for over 10. And so I appreciate what Representative Nygren's doing. The one thing we see a lot of problems with is DRT or drug replacement therapy programs. So that's taking addicts into recovery programs and putting them on Suboxone or checking them into methadone clinics. So I'm a big advocate for local recovery programs, awareness like Representative Nygren was talking about, and abstinence. So I like that he's trying to bring more awareness, conversation, and treatment facilities.
Michael, may I ask, what was your turning point? What resource really worked for you?
The combination between family support and local recovery programs, where I met a sponsor and a group of individuals who shared the same struggle as I did.
Michael, thanks for the call. Representative, it sounds like he was able to find, a group around him to give him that support system in order to come clean.
There is no one pathway to recovery. And first of all, Michael, congratulations on 3 years. That's awesome. And that's one of the things that we have tried to, and I am no expert on this. I began this and have continued this as a legislator, but more initially started as a dad, kind of with a cause. So I work with people who are experts to try and identify, you know, issues that we can identify as a state government to work on. We don't want to incentivize any one type of treatment for people like Michael, because everyone's different, whether it be abstinence based. Whether it be, you know, medication-assisted treatment. He's talking about Suboxone, methadone. There's a third one. Common name that people hear about is Vivitrol. The medical professionals, we have tried to leave that up to them to decide what is appropriate for you as a patient. I think that's an appropriate way to address it. But, you know, that's why we listen to them. And people like Michael's voice definitely matters in this conversation. We've utilized an organization called Pew Charitable Trust, who's a nonpartisan organization, does a lot of research on state government policies. And a number of the things we're doing in this legislation come from them, and they've been a great asset for us.
Do peer recovery coaches increase success rates for long-term recovery?
Yeah, they do. That's actually one of the pieces that we're addressing in this legislation is not only we've done a good job of building these peer recovery coaches, people that have shared experience, people that have been, you know, that are in recovery themselves, that have had similar experiences. But Medicaid, we have to make sure that if these people are available, that there's a, let's just face it, if it's not going to get paid for, if the work isn't going to get paid for, there may not be an availability. So we're going to fund peer recovery coaches to do a warm handoff with somebody when they come into perhaps the emergency room or whatever medical setting they're in, to make sure that they're hand in hand with somebody else who's been there and done that, and can help them navigate a very complicated system, and one that the average person would struggle with. But when you've got all the pressures and issues dealing with addiction, makes it even more complicated. So I believe that that's a very vital piece of what we're trying to accomplish.
Another piece here is creating a recovery-friendly workplace in state government. What does that entail?
Well, as I said, there's a lot of barriers to long-term recovery. One of them is stable housing. One of them is stable employment. So this is more of a concept than anything. We've already identified that one of the ways to treat opioid addiction is with medication-assisted treatment. But in that in itself can also create some problems for employment. Perhaps maybe you have drug tests that you have to take at your employer that now all of a sudden you're testing positive for this medication-assisted treatment. Perhaps we have to understand as an employer that you're going to have appointments that you need to go to, that you're going to need counseling, that you might need other supports from your employer. So making the state of Wisconsin a recovery-friendly employer is setting an example for other employers in our state when we really need people working to support our economy.
We have Representative John Nygren with us talking about the HOPE agenda. The goal with dozens of bills is to get people from an active addiction to long-term recovery. Your thoughts, your insights, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Representative Nygren right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with Representative John Nygren of Marinette about the HOPE agenda and this years-long effort to address opioid use disorder in Wisconsin. We're looking more closely at the 30 pieces of legislation. Earlier this year, a bright spot, it was announced that opioid deaths are down in Wisconsin for the first time since 2015, but there were still 838 opioid-related deaths last year. Are you with an organization that helps people struggling with opioid use? What advice can you share to fight substance use disorder? What resources does your organization provide? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And Representative John Nygren stays with us. When we look at additional treatment programs Funding for health providers is also an issue. Governor Evers vetoed out of the state budget funding for acupuncture treatment, for instance. And in his veto message, the governor noted it was related to the legislature's refusal to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Would a Medicaid expansion give the state more opportunities, more flexibility to fund treatment programs?
You know, I mean, that's a fair question. It's one I hear, and it's one I ask anytime I go to a treatment provider. Are there barriers for people that need treatment? And there's a facility in Marinette, and the answer I've gotten from them is when people come in for treatment, they're at the point in life where oftentimes they're not even working, and they haven't been for some time, and that they already do qualify for Medicaid as it exists today. Also, the system that we created in Wisconsin, we call them Hope Centers. There was also funding and grants available for someone that needed treatment that could get it either through Medicaid or not through Medicaid. So we would, when it came to addiction, we've tried to make sure that there were no barriers either from the Medicaid system or the private insurance system. I'm actually working with the insurers in Wisconsin to make sure that we're addressing prior authorization restrictions that have made it difficult in some cases for people to get the treatment they need that their doctor says that they need. So we've taken a broad approach in dealing with this, and Medicaid in of itself, and expanding Medicaid is not the only answer. There are other ways to accomplish the very same things.
And you chair Joint Finance.
Yes.
Has there been any movement toward a compromise between what the governor wants and the legislature over this issue?
Let's face it. So state government, politics in general, is kind of a, you know, bare knuckles profession right now. And my hope is an issue like this is actually a way to work with the governor and Democrats. As you pointed out as we began this conversation, it's been a bipartisan issue for a long time. I was disappointed with the veto. However, we are actually proposing the very same thing. We've talked to the Department of Health Services. They believe the acupuncture and other non-addictive forms of treatment and the resources we're putting into that are appropriate. I was asked, you know, why not just go for a veto or override if this makes sense? I don't want that type of relationship with the governor on this issue. I want him to be able to be with me and sign this into law and help everybody that's struggling with addiction and not make it political. That's our main goal.
Meth use in Wisconsin mm-hmm. is on the rise. The state crime lab handled over 1,400 meth cases last year. That's a more than 450% increase in a decade. Do our state policies that look at substance abuse, do they take all substances into consideration?
That we have. So definitely from the beginning, this started as opioids and heroin. But early on, we identified there's more out there. I mean, there's alcohol abuse, there's meth abuse. If we address all the things that are in our universe of potential addiction today, something else will come in and take its place. So we've been very careful ever since the beginning is to not make this just about opioids. Any systems we build, any funding that we provide has to be able to address all those addictions that are out there. Meth is a little harder because, at least from my perspective as a non-expert in this, there's not a medication-assisted treatment. There's not a great there are not great programs for meth treatment. It's much more difficult than I shouldn't say much more difficult because it's all difficult, mm-hmm. but it's a different type of treatment that's needed.
And they're hitting small communities very hard, where access to treatment can be the most difficult, the most biggest challenge.
And that's where, I mean, when I started this, Marinette didn't have a treatment center. We do now. Northern Wisconsin, there were a lot of pockets of no treatment where you'd have to drive miles. We've addressed that in one of the efforts in the last round was creating what's called a hub and spoke treatment system. The only way we're going to ever have enough providers is if we look at how we provide that treatment. The IDB on the hub and spoke, it's been implemented in a number of other states, most of them smaller than us, so it took us some time to kind of do the research on how it would work here in Wisconsin, is the hub would be the the place where you get the initial detox, initial rounds of treatment, whether it be medication-assisted treatment or whatever, counseling. And then the spokes would be the handoff where you would go into your community. You'd continue likely with a primary care doctor who would continue that treatment, manage the counseling appointments, help you with other things such as employment and housing and all those things. So that's changing, working within our existing system and creating more treatment from within what already exists is our best opportunity to get the treatment out into all parts of our state.
Talking with Representative John Nygren, who serves in the State Assembly, we're looking at a package of bills called the HOPE Agenda that's aimed at combating the opioid epidemic. You can join in. Are you in the medical field? What do you see firsthand when it comes to opioid addiction? And on the front lines, where do you think the state should invest more resources, more funding? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Richard now in Loganville. Hi, Richard.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, hello, Richard. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just kind of really concerned over many years of after the government perpetuating the opiate crisis is why are they throwing the people under the bus who have been using these drugs responsibly for many years? You know, somebody addicted to opiates have a choice. They can get help. The family can help them. They can get into rehab. And people with, you know, multiple operations for spine, lupus, MS, all this stuff, pain management people are targeting them and profiling them as junkies. And it's not the case.
Richard, I want to pause right there because, you know, certainly people who are dealing with pain management, especially also end of life, this, you know, opioids are a big part of that.
So we've, you know, I've heard Richard's concern before, and I take it very seriously. But just to be clarify, Wisconsin has not passed any laws, other states have, that limit prescribing of opioids for anyone. The medical examining board has provided guidelines for doctors to follow. They're guidelines. They're not laws. If you don't follow the guidelines, it's not like a doctor is going to jail or anything. But I've heard these complaints before. And what has happened, I believe, is sometimes that we overreact as a society, and perhaps the medical community is maybe overreacting or maybe they're not. You know, the true and most successful use of opioids is more in short-term acute pain, chronic pain. Studies have shown that actually they can work against you. They can actually, they basically become less effective as time goes by. But Richard's concern, like I said, is legitimate, and we've tried not to, you know, throw anyone under the bus, that's for sure. But the physical investments in physical forms of treatment, the physical therapy, the chiropractic, the acupuncture, non-addictive ways to treat chronic pain are how we're trying to provide people with, like Richard, with an alternative so that the addiction never begins, but their treatment, their pain is addressed.
In the last few seconds we have here, as you look ahead in confronting the opioid crisis, 30 bills now on the, you know, before you, where do you go from here?
Well, I think you're in politics. The typical way that we react as elected officials is we introduce a bill, we get signed into law, a lot of fanfare with, you know, everybody gets their pens because the governor signed into law, and then we're done. This issue has been way different. It's been a 5-year battle to this point. There's 7 more pieces of legislation that kind of fill those gaps. We'll hopefully make it better in our state. But at the end of the day, there's no victory lap. There's no mission accomplished banner hanging off the side of the state capitol. We're going to continue to be there and try to be supportive of people struggling with addiction and help them into long-term recovery as long as I'm in the legislature.
Representative Nygren, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day.
Representative John Nygren of Marinette. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.